The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Taoiseach Simon Harris, good morning and welcome.
Good morning, Pat. Thank you very much.
First time in this studio since you became Taoiseach, so you're particularly welcome this morning. But
thank
lots
so
to discuss. Yes. And I think the first one, just off the headlines there, that people under 21 won't be able to buy fags.
Yes, this is something the government does want to make progress on. We've made a lot of progress as a country when it comes to reducing our smoking rates, but we have somewhat seen that progress stall in recent years. And I think the Minister for Health is quite right now to look at all of the various options that are available to him to really reboot that.
Okay, and raising the age to 21
is something that
even though people have the right to vote at 18.
Yeah, absolutely. But voting is a good thing. Smoking isn't. There is a difference. There is a substantial difference, obviously. What the Minister is eager to do, though, and government has yet to formally consider these proposals, we're not talking about making something illegal that is legal today. So in other words, if you're 18, 19, 20 and you're smoking today, we wish you weren't from a public health point of view, but we're not intending to make that illegal. We're talking about people when they reach the age of 18, so people who are not yet 18 and not being able to
buy fags until they are 21.
And this is something that's being used in quite a number of countries, and I think we should learn from best international practice.
Yeah. What about vaping? I mean, this is a growing hazard. I mean, why not do the same for vaping?
Well, I'm very worried about vaping because I think it's in many ways the revenge of the tobacco industry, where they're constantly looking to morph into new areas. We already have progress underway in terms of vaping legislation, but the Minister is eager to go further and I'm eager to support him in relation to that. So we already have vaping legislation, but we are eager to see how we can do more in that space.
Now, one of the most compelling problems that you have at the moment is the arrival almost overnight in various places of tent villages or tent cities. It is a symptom. It's not the cause. But first of all, let's talk about the symptom. How are you going to address this ongoing symptom of immigration wherever it springs up? I mean, are we going to have this multi-task force, almost like a hit squad going around to here, there and yon?
Well, what we're going to do is make sure that never again is there a situation where Official Ireland can almost turn a blind eye to the development over many, many, many months of an encampment, which not only was bad from a law-abiding point of view, was also extraordinarily bad from a public health point of view.
Have you figured out why it was allowed to develop? I mean, doing their job?
Well, I'll be very honest with you. I mean, when I became Taoiseach, it became very apparent to me very, very quickly that the approach from many agencies was far too siloed. This is a matter for this body, this is a matter for the other body. There's only one Ireland, and there's only one government, and I'm the head of it. And my intention as Taoiseach now is to coordinate and pull people together in relation to this. That is not the same thing. That is not the same thing as saying that tents won't arise in parts of our city or parts of our country. But it is very different when tents arrive for a relatively short period of time versus what was allowed to happen in relation to Main Street.
Okay, so the person who wasn't doing his job was the former Taoiseach, Leo Varadkar?
No, not at all. I mean,
if you're doing the job now that needed to be done and someone wasn't doing their job, what's changed? You've become Taoiseach.
No, that's a slightly mischievous way of putting it, because what's actually changed is the stage that we're at in relation to migration has changed. We need to move from the emergency response to a much more sustainable model. Like when I travel around the country, and I've been doing a lot of that lately, Irish people are full of compassion, but you know what they're also full of is common sense. And what they want to see when it comes to migration policy is compassion and common sense aligning. They want us to be honest with people coming to this country about what we can and can't do. We can absolutely provide shelter, but not necessarily housing for people who come here. We can absolutely use state land and provide people with access to sanitation and help people who are fleeing persecution. But we also have to be truthful in relation to what we can do.
Is it your hope then that people, and all of them do appear to have smartphones and so on, they keep in touch with their friends, their colleagues, their families? Are you hoping that the kind of less than salubrious welcome on the mat that is now available in Ireland compared to before, that they will just text and WhatsApp and whatever their friends and colleagues say, by the way, Ireland used to be great, ain't so great anymore, don't come? Is that what this is all about?
No, it's about being honest. It's about trying to have an honest and truthful discussion in relation to migration. Like, this is a country that benefits from immigration. There's no doubt about that. But and I want to see more of that happen in terms of our health service, in terms of our construction sector. But there's many ways to come to Ireland. And if you want to come economically to work here, please apply for a work permit. international protection isn't for that purpose. International protection is for people who are fleeing persecution. And what we are doing, what we're already doing, and what we'll continue to do on an almost daily basis is look at all of the levers that are at the state's disposal in terms of making sure we have a sustainable migration system. What does that mean? Well, it means things like faster processing times, because, Pat, we know this works. When Helen McEntee introduced faster processing times, as a result of this, we have seen countries that used to be amongst the highest actually fall in terms of the number of people.
Which countries are they? Because Nigeria is still high.
So Georgia is an example. Georgia isn't even in the top 10 now, and it used to be number one. Nigeria has just been added to the fast processing system in the last couple of weeks, and I expect we'll see progress in relation to that over the next few months. We have to, though, look at all of the levers, because I agree with you. Every accommodation, every discussion about migration can't just be about accommodation. We've obligations around accommodation. We need to do better. We need to use state land. We need to provide tents and sanitation. But actually, we also need to look at all of the various aspects of our migration policy: faster processing time, effective deportations, integrating people who have a right to be here and ensuring they can work.
What about aligning with the UK in some way? Because if most of the new arrivals are coming via the UK across the border, we are effectively mopping up their problem, unwittingly, I suppose, but that's what's happening. I mean, what needs to be done? Do we need to have ID cards so that people can be identified as having a right to be here? Because the idea of stopping a bus and looking for non-white faces and interrogating them does not seem to me to be an acceptable way to go.
No, of course it isn't. I mean, we're not in that space around ID cards, but what we are in the space of is aligning better with the European Union, making sure that we work on a European level in relation to this. I mean, Britain, and I say this with the greatest of respect, since Britain started talking tougher on migration, all that's actually happened is the number of people coming to their country illegally has increased. What we need to do is make sure that we have an effective system. I know factually, and this is the experience the world over, that faster processing times are the way, because what you want to do here is you want to help people. This is a good country. We want to welcome people to our country. The people who have a right to be here, we want to say, yes, you have a right to be here. We want to integrate you, integrate your children, and let you make a contribution to Irish society. But the people who don't have a right to be here, they need to be asked and ensure that they leave much more quickly. And that's what faster processing gives you.
Do we have the ability to do that processing? I mean, we're talking about years heretofore. I mean, how quickly can you process someone so-called, welcome them if they're entitled to be here, or reject them if they're not, and then where do you send them if they've come via Luxembourg or Belgium or the UK? Where do you send them back to if their country of origin is well beyond the EU?
So there's a couple of parts to that question. In relation to processing times, I mean, we have increased the number of staff who are working on processing. There were about 200 staff working in the International Protection Office. We'll get that number to at least 485 this year and perhaps beyond. It is quite incredible to see the improvements in processing times despite the very significant increase in the number of people seeking to be processed. In relation to...
What is an improvement? I mean, are we talking about months still?
Remember, we're seeing initial decisions. We're seeing an initial yes-no within 12 weeks now for all the countries in relation to the safe country list. That is a turnaround from months and years to weeks. So we are making real progress in relation to this. And what we also know is, and look, this is human nature. If people know that if they come to a country and they're likely to get a quicker no, they are less likely to come if they don't have a legitimate
But what about those that you were entitled to send back to the UK, over 200, and not a sinner was sent back?
Sometimes that's slightly misrepresented, and I don't mean it's misrepresented badly, but obviously there are stages of the appeals where people can legally challenge and the likes. I am satisfied that the Department of Justice is working extraordinarily hard in making sure that people who have exhausted the process and gotten a no do leave our country. But I also believe...
But that process could be years, couldn't it?
Well, it could, but we need to speed. That's why we're speeding.
So isn't that the temptation for anyone coming here who's here illegally, who's no entitled to be here? Go to the process. I'm sure you'll be here for a couple of years, and then you never know what might change. We might get a dig out.
Let me be very clear to anybody who is of that mindset. That's not going to happen in this country anymore, because that's why we have the safe country list. That's why we have faster processing times. But you are right. That probably was the mindset. I can come to Ireland and I may not get a yes or a no for such a long period of time. Why would I not come? It's a great country. Why would I not come and actually try to settle in Ireland? What I'm saying to those people now is Ireland is a warm and compassionate country, but our migration policy is going to be grounded grounded in common sense. If you don't have a right to be here, you're going to be told that much more quickly, and you're going to be asked and ensured that you leave much more quickly. Mm. And you asked me a very specific question about returns, which isn't a phrase I like because we're talking about human beings, but people who don't have a right to be here, how do we more effectively return them to their country
and
of origin?
Where?
That's why we need to pass the EU Migration Pact, because that will have specific agreements in place in relation to how you can return people. We already have many return agreements in place at an Irish and an EU level.
Do you have... Are you a bit unhappy with the NGOs who are giving tents to people? And that is, after all, their remit, to give people shelter who have no shelter. But people can be shipped out to Crooksling, decide they don't like it there, their tent has been destroyed, they get another tent from an NGO.
No, I'm not unhappy with charities who are going about doing their very best to provide humanitarian assistance. What I am frustrated about is the siloed system in relation to migration policy. And I'm about 34 or 35 days as Taoiseach of this country, and I'm absolutely determined that we get a grip of this. And what does a grip of this mean? It means that we actually have a system that people in this country understand, and a system in this country that people who come here understand, that we have a coordinated response, that we don't just every day talk about accommodation or tents, but we also talk about the social welfare system and how that interacts. We talk about accommodation costs and what's a fair contribution somebody should make towards accommodation when they have status, that we talk about a consistency of approach to people from Ukraine. This country's done a huge amount for Ukraine. We're so proud of that. But we need to have a consistency of approach. It shouldn't be whether you came 1 month or not, that you get a different level
so
of support.
So is it going to change after this memo goes to Cabinet tomorrow?
It's certainly my intention that we will see changes in a number of areas that do inject what I think Irish people, I believe, has been lacking, which is that common sense approach. We want to be, let me be really clear, we are a compassionate country. We want to help people, but we also want to know that the system is fair. And therefore, I think we need to look, yes, at welfare consistency. We need to look at a contribution that people who have status should make to accommodation. We need to look at making sure that anybody in work is working legally, that there are more workplace inspections. I think there's a number of common sense things that we should do, but crucially, we need to work at a European level, because this is not an Irish challenge. When I go abroad and meet other European prime ministers and go to the European Council, this is an issue that every country is grappling with. Migration is a good thing. What is not a good thing is not having a consistent, coherent approach to it.
Now, one of the issues that is... convulsing the world, I suppose, is that of Israel, Gaza. And we are proposing to give a recognition to Palestinian statehood in just a few days' time, along with Spain and maybe a number of other countries. Belgium perhaps might be one of them. I'm not sure how many more sure will join in. But a question I've been asking on this program of all the international commentators and analysts and so on is, what exactly are we recognizing? Because you've got Hamas running Gaza. Do we recognise a state run by the people who committed the terror of October the 7th and who, it appears, are quite happy to sacrifice many of their compatriots in pursuance of their long-term aims? Are we recognising the Palestinian Authority with all the allegations of corruption against them? What are we recognising precisely?
Well, the only thing we recognise Hamas to be is a brutal, illegal, disgusting terrorist organisation that pledges the destruction of Israel. Israel has every right to live in peace and security. Ireland fully supports that. Ireland fully supports the state of Israel in terms of its security and its peace. But we also believe fundamentally, we believe in our programme for government, and I believe people in this country overwhelmingly believe that the way you bring stability and peace to the Middle East is a two-state solution. And by recognising, should this be the decision we make, and I hope it is, by recognising the existence of a state of Palestine, that very much keeps to the fore the idea
but
that
what
there will
are,
be
what
a
are we recognising exactly, given the geography of the situation at the moment, two bits of that land separated and... There's no way, it seems, they can be joined. We have, as you put it, a terrorist organisation running one part and Fatah running the other part in the Palestinian Authority. What precisely are we recognising?
But remember, when you get to the start of statehood, these are challenges that the world always has to grapple with. What we're recognising is that there is a state of Palestine. And that the state of Palestine exists, and that any peace settlement needs to recognise that there are two states. But let me be very clear, we won't be recognising Hamas as anything other than a brutal, illegal terrorist organisation. I mean, the Irish position on this often gets misrepresented into an Israeli or a Palestinian camp, for want of a better phrase. This is actually about our country believing in the rule of international law and our country believing in human rights. What's happening now in Palestine, what's happening now in Gaza, what we're seeing happening in Rafah, is a humanitarian catastrophe for which there are no words to capture the significance of. Every single day we're seeing children, we're seeing civilians being maimed and being killed. And we are gone a long way. We are gone a long way from the right of Israel to defend itself after the 7th of October to a situation now where there is absolute bloodshed on an hourly basis. There needs to be an immediate ceasefire. All of the hostages need to be released unconditionally. And there needs to be peace talks to bring about a two-state solution. And by Ireland and Spain and a number of other countries, and indeed I've calls today with some other European leaders in relation to this, I believe by us recognising the fact that there are a two-state solution, it very much keeps that alive. Because let's be honest, the current Prime Minister of Israel is not of that mind. It has always been the view of the world that much of the world, that a two-state solution has to be the end point here. And by recognising two states, you help bring that about, I believe.
Okay, so this would be akin to recognising that in a despotic part of the world, that you recognise maybe a South American country or whatever that's ruled by a despot, it's there. You don't like the colour of the government, but you still recognise the state. Well, is that a fair parsing of what you're saying?
I can fundamentally differentiate between a person from Israel and the Netanyahu administration. I can fundamentally differentiate between Palestine and a horrific terrorist organisation. They're all different things. The Palestinian people are a decent people, and they deserve a state.
What did you make of the Eurovision vote on Saturday? And this is not normally the kind of thing we talk about in a political interview, but we gave them 10, almost the maximum points, to Israel. The popular vote seemed to be incredibly favourable to Israel, the song, and yet the juries voting across Europe didn't give many marks to the song. So it looked like the public was not political and the juries were.
I don't know.
Because the song was, on the face of it, discounting everything else, was a fine song, and obviously a lot of people liked it per se.
Well, look, I was in Páirc Uí Chaoimh watching Cork and Limerick in the hurling, so I didn't see the Eurovision, and then I was on to another function. I'm very proud of Bambi Thug. They did our country proud. They did Macroom proud. They did Cork proud. First time we've been in a final since 2018 to come sixth. Really want to commend Bambi Thug for that performance and for the job they did for Ireland. Look, maybe I'm old fashioned, but can we maybe just view a song contest as just that? I do think I'm happy to leave it at that, in the sense that, you know, this was a Eurovision Song Contest. They have a voting system in place. People vote. Presumably, people vote for the music. And I'm not going to read too much in terms of geopolitics into the Eurovision, though many others do.
Now, moving on to what's on your agenda, there's the announcement of a package for small businesses, which looks like maybe an election stunt, but it's quite a generous package for small businesses. They can recoup up to 50% of their rates bill. Is that it? Up to a max of €10,000.
So look, the government needs to obviously consider this. My colleague Peter Burke, the new Minister for Business, has been working with a number of other colleagues, and the three parties in government have been working to see what we can do to help small businesses. It's important to remember the biggest collective employer in this country isn't a foreign multinational. It's small businesses up and down the length and breadth of the country, in towns and villages. I've met so many of them in the last few weeks, and we've done a bit of research on this, and we're trying to have a targeted approach. The areas that seem to be particularly in difficulty at the moment in terms of cost is the retail sector and the hospitality sector. And you are right, we have a scheme in place called the Increased Cost of Business Grant that's giving people back
now, who qualifies
some
for
of
that?
Their rates. There's a criteria in relation to your turnover, but many, I think about 140,000 businesses have qualified. About 60% have drawn that down. What we are doing, and I don't want to get ahead of a government decision here, what we're doing is saying, is there more we can do in that space? Are there particular sectors of the economy that could benefit from a further injection? We're also, though, trying to, and I think this is a bigger conversation we have to honestly have, we're also trying to provide a degree of policy certainty to the sector. When I walk in, and I've been in so many in the last few days alone, cafes, restaurants, you know, relatively small businesses, but relatively significant employers in their community. What they're saying to me is, Simon, you know, new costs keep coming at us. And you guys up in the door might have a bright idea, but then you're asking us to pay for the bright idea.
Yeah. We're talking about things like the timing of when the living wage comes
every time
in,
we decide
the pension, auto-enrolment, new bank holidays.
All of these things are good in and of themselves, and supporting workers is good, and an employer who supports a worker will keep their workforce happy. So, you know, we're very much, as a very much as a government want to support people going to work, want to make sure work pays. But making sure work pays doesn't constantly mean passing on the cost to the small business. So what I'd like to see is that government now starts considering kind of an SME test before it approves new proposals. What impact is this idea going to have? It's easy to have it in the Leinster House bubble. We don't have to meet the payroll at the end of the week. So it's about balancing here how government supports workers and government supports businesses in supporting workers, but how government also makes sure that small businesses remain viable. So a lot of small businesses I'm in, and they look very busy. And they say to me, but don't be fooled, Simon. We're busy, but actually the bottom line is really tight. And we've worked too hard in this country to keep small businesses afloat during COVID, to have a situation now where, you know, the things economically are going well, to see them struggle. So we've a lot of work to do in this space. And I'm hoping now the coming days will mark a good start.
Already some of the candidates just putting on their posters, housing. That will be on the doorsteps for the local and Europeans and ultimately the general election when the time comes. You've set out an ambitious target that were you to be returned to power, 50,000 houses a year for the next 5 years. We've been told now it should be 80.
Well, I had a wry smile at the weekend because there was an awful lot of sniggering from the commentariat when I suggested we needed to lift our scale of ambition in relation to housing in the coming years and do 50,000 homes. I think we've been proven to be correct in that, because since I said that, the Construction Industry Federation, the people who help build the homes, which I always think you should listen to the people who have to do things, they've said that it's doable. And now you're right. And what I read in the weekend papers is that some people have a view that out even further, out to 2050, we should be getting up to 80,000 homes. What's definitely clear is this. Objectively, housing supply is increasing and increasing fast. I'm not sure listeners know this, but every day in Ireland now, every working day, 337 new homes are starting. I mean, that's quite incredible. We saw over 12,000 new homes commence construction in the first 3 months of this year. That is a 60% increase. Within days of becoming Taoiseach, I worked with Dara O'Brien to extend the waiver on development levies to make it cheaper to build. We've pumped more money into the First Home Scheme to help first-time buyers. So there's a lot of positivity there that I'm seeing a real impact in when I go around the country. But we have to do more. We have to look at how we can be more ambitious. And I'm very, very clear. I don't want anybody at home thinking that I'm anything other than restless to make more progress on housing supply with Dara O'Brien.
The problem is, and I heard Marion Finnegan, who was on from Sherry Fitz on The Breakfast Show this morning, saying that during the Celtic Tiger years, we had the capacity to build 90,000 homes. So it is possible to do it. But then at that time, I remember remarking many times on air that we were importing Polish workers to build the houses to house the Polish workers. So, I mean, we were in that kind of a loop, and then it all went pear-shaped and it all collapsed. We do need to up the construction workforce in order to meet these targets. And in the meantime, where are they to live? In Nissan huts, in tents, where are they to live?
Well, look, I think we need to do a number of things. And that's actually why in my last role as the Minister with Responsibility for Skills and Apprenticeships, we put a real focus on broadening the conversation with school leavers about their options after school, not just university, but how an apprenticeship could actually provide you with effectively a third level qualification and a very rewarding career and a decent income. I think that what we have to do now is in the end of June, we will publish the draft national planning framework. And that will basically give an indicative outline of what the housing targets need to be out for the next number of years. That will go out to consultation. People in communities right across Ireland will have an opportunity to give their say. And in the autumn, the final version will be approved. So we will have new housing targets by the end of this year. And that is a good thing. And people talk about my party being in government since 2011. So let me just deal with that before you ask it, because it's so true, we have been. But when we came to government, there were less than 7,000 homes built that year. Despite a global pandemic disrupting supply, we are now seeing a situation where we've burst through the 30,000, in fact, 32,626 homes built in 2023. We'll exceed our targets again this year as well. We saw more social homes built in this country than any time since the 1970s last year. So I understand, and I meet them all when I go around the country and talk to people who want to know whether their adult son or daughter in the box room of the house ever have an opportunity to buy a home. I want them to know I hear that. I want them to know I get it. That's why we've put plans in place to help your son or daughter bridge the gap to save a deposit, whether that's the Help to Buy or the First Home Scheme, schemes that Sinn Féin want to get rid of. And it's also why every single day in work we see what more can we do to encourage more supply.
I know you're under time pressure. Last question then. You have become the youngest Taoiseach ever in the history of the state. You're now in the job only a few weeks. But you will be judged one way or the other by your electoral performance. I mean, the reason you switch leader of a party going into an election year is that you think it can do better with the new one. Big challenge for you. Well, you will be judged on that.
Well, look, I'm under no illusion past the stage of the cycle in which I've taken over. I understand that the local and European elections will take place only a few weeks, really, after I've come to office. And we're fielding really good candidates right across the country. I'm out with them lots. They're working really hard. Local elections are local. And I know we've very, very, very good candidates, both experienced and new councillors.
But what would be success for you? Because probably given all the crisis and so on, there may be a loss of council seats. Who knows about European seats? What would represent success for you that you could feel good about the job you're doing?
I'm not setting targets in relation to this because I think that's a bit foolhardy. But my success is getting as many of our candidates over the line and elected as possible. And what I'd say to the electorate, what I'd ask them is this. I've taken up this job only a few weeks ago. I'm determined to make a positive impact. I'm determined every day I come to work to deliver for you. It's all about delivery. And what I'm asking you is this. I'm listening to what you've said. I've heard what you've said in relation to housing. I've heard what you've said in relation to migration. I've heard from small businesses and I'm responding in real time. And I'd ask on the 7th of June that you give us a chance to keep that going and support our candidates across the country.
Taoiseach Simon Harris, thank you very much for joining.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk.